Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, welcome. It's the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. The full team is here. The Monty has gathered. Yes, the Avengers have assembled. And in the corner, pretending to be Thor, Rafe Blanf.
Hello, everybody. I'm not quite sure about Thor, but we've certainly got Tony Stark
Black
back
Widow.
In the form of you and Spence.
Oh, I get to be Tony Stark, do I? I get to be the drunk that was in Memphis Belle.
Talking over everybody else.
Yeah, that probably works. Okay. Who should we get to play Archer?
I'm not sure about Archer. I mean, Steve's clearly the Incredible Hulk.
What, we haven't to get him angry?
Well, you wouldn't like him when he's angry.
No, because when he gets angry, he talks about backside illumination.
I do, and I shall in this very podcast.
Yes, it should be obvious what the topic is going to be for this upcoming podcast. Rafe, it is, of course...
the Lumia 1020, also known as the Lumia 909, until a few weeks ago.
Oh, right, so we've got to do... I was setting you up for a really funny answer there. We're going to be serious this week.
We are, because there's actually a lot to talk about. There's a really interesting new device, and I can hear Steve salivating in the background over thought of a new camera to talk about with all sorts of interesting technology, and actually quite a bit more than we were expecting, really, based on what we said in the previous podcast.
Excellent. So we don't need to talk about how I've been kidnapped by music in Eurovision when I was in Denmark and couldn't make it back. We're not mentioning that at all, no?
No, or the fact that it was actually your microphone was on the fritz.
No, we're not going to. All the other podcasts are fine without microphone. I'm not. Okay, let's go with the 1020. It looked lovely from this end down the web stream. Steve and I were watching the press conference in New York. Rafe, did we see you in the front row, slightly stage right?
It wasn't quite the front row. I was about five rows back, but it certainly was a very effective presentation, and I got some hands-on time with the device. And it's hard, actually, stepping outside the bubble. I'm just back from New York, and it's kind of... was it really that amazing? You know, it's hard not to come across as a screaming fanger when you see a phone with such a, you know, a big leap forward in technology. I mean, to be fair, that's the 808, but this is a kind of a different kettle of fish. I mean, Nokia themselves referred to the 808 as kind of a niche device, and this 1020 is obviously intended to be mainstream. And actually, there's as I mentioned briefly, there's a lot of step forward. But maybe the first thing we should just talk about is the presentation. It was probably, in 10 years of going to Nokia launch events, the most effective one I've seen. The right combination of plenty of information, you know, focusing on what was new, which was the camera, but with just a few elements of humour, you know, in that. And I don't know how well that came across on the stream.
I think it came across really well. We've always talked before that when we're at the finished presentations, I remember the comes with music presentation, the key line was so buried in the middle of the speech, and the launch of the 5800 was a mess. I was really glad about this one. Two things did stand out to me, Rafe. The first one was those yellow trainers coordinating their yellow, black and white Converse with the colours available of the phone. I thought was a very American and subtle touch, in that way that Americans don't manage subtlety. The other one that I found interesting, Rafe, is the key money phrase that here's the 1020, here's our new phone. It was actually done by a video. You didn't have Stephen Neal like reaching a book and go, here's a new phone, the 1020, boom, and then a video plays. It was, we'd like to show you something new, and then the presentation, the actual reveal was done in the video, and then he would walk out on stage and just carry on. I think the only missed beat for me was that the actual money shot, the actual, this is what we've been working on, this is what I've put up with all the brickbats for, he handed over to his video department.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see what you mean, that heavily kind of CGI intro sequence. I'd have, you know, maybe done that, you know, after he sort of pulled the phone out of his pocket. But on the other hand, you know, it kind of showed off the complexity of the device, which is something you can't very easily, you know, suddenly assemble it on the stage.
And let's be honest, would you rather have had somebody go, here is our new imaging smartphone with 41 megapixels that actually takes 37 and 5 megapixel images at the same time, which adds up to 42?
Well, I think that's maybe a little too unfair, but what was really effective for me was actually bringing the imaging team on stage, and their passion for their work was, you know, quite evident. But Stephen Elop also, you know, that sense of excitement, something new. And you know, some of the demos that got talked about, some of them were a little bit corny, you know, finding a needle in a haystack, but it worked really well, as well as sort of demos of the video, for example, which was showing bees flying. And it actually is the hobby of one of the people who, you know, helped develop that camera. Obviously, there's a big team doing that. And you talked about those trainers. Well, one of the kind of exclusive bits of information I can reveal is those trainers weren't just yellow, white and black. They were actually color Pantone matched to the yellow that Nokia uses in their devices. And so that kind of gives you an idea for the level of detail that went into preparing this presentation. And you know, that work was obviously done by many offices, but some of that was done out of the UK London office by the kind of global comms and marketing team. So I think they deserve a lot of credit for the work that went into it. Obviously, it is a team effort. It was carefully prepared, the presentation. But what also struck me was the first 20 minutes of it was pretty much solely focused on the camera, and then only then was there kind of a throwaway line. You know, oh, it's also a Windows phone device. It does lots of great stuff. And then it was on to some apps and some other discussion areas.
But that's what Samsung do with the Galaxy, except Samsung don't even go, oh, by the way, it's an Android device. They just go, it's Galaxy. This is... I think this is one of the key things, people, when you said earlier, you know, is it a niche device, is it selling? Nokia pushing the Lumia name. So when somebody goes into Carphone Warehouse, they're happy to pick up a 520 because it says Lumia, just like they saw in The Guardian over the weekend.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's also a good point. But actually, the point I was making, it was the discussion focused on the camera aspects of the device. And, you know, the fact it was a smartphone, we all know what Windows Phone does. We all know what that means as a smartphone. So there wasn't a boring repetition of it can do this and this and this. And, you know, and the Hear software got a mention, which is obviously a big component of, you know, Nokia's Windows Phone offering. But it was only to update us on what was new in, you know, that particular area. And I thought that worked very well. You know, I compare it to some other manufacturers' presentations where you tend to get a repetition of all the features, and of course there's always a focus on the new stuff, but it was even more true this time around. I thought it was very effectively handled. I mean, also what probably didn't come across so well on the live stream was there was a very effective presentation kind of with various layers to the actual projection, and then as it ended the kind of whole stage opened up, slid apart to reveal the demo area beyond. So it was all in keeping with the camera theme. There were lots of those nice touches. I mean, from the 41 second countdown and the 41 minute countdown, you know, all sort of building into that 41 megapixel message, the idea of a camera. And you know, it's that sense of being lulled into, you know, this is an amazing device. And actually it worked, because certainly all the media I talked to were pretty blown away by the, you know, the technology and the camera aspect of it. There were some, you know, questions around the pricing and still around Windows Phone and Nokia itself, but I think everyone agreed it was, you know, incredibly well handled. And it wasn't the kind of the false sense of, you know, Apple style presentation where it's magic. It's, you know, actually the detail was being explained, you know, the 200 components in the camera module. So it was actually a pretty honest presentation as well. And I think that can only be a good thing going forward. If they can maintain that kind of momentum for in the device marketing itself, it could be very good news for Nokia.
So, Steve, let's bring your voice in here as the person who can actually use a camera phone, as opposed to me, who can... I'm going to be interested to see what my pictures look like at the Town 20, but the promise is that the average user will take better pictures and the pro user will take far better pictures.
I think that's fair enough. I mean, I've said for ages, my Zinnen rants are legendary, of course. and the number one...
Steve thing, Smash!
The number one problem area that most people have, I mean, everybody can take a decent snap out in the sunlight, even you, Ewan, you know, photographing your kids or your dog or whatever, cycling through Edinburgh. But the number one problem area is low light. It's a party at a pub, it's a restaurant, it's in the living room where things just turn out blurry. And having a Zinnen flash, yay, on Windows Phone properly for the first time will mean that you can just, Ewan, just take out your Lumia 1020, point it at your daughter's doing something funny or cute or whatever, press the shutter button and the Zinnen flash will kick in, the excellent optics, the Pure View system, all of it will kick in and you'll get excellent photographs. So I think even you won't be disappointing us with 1020 photos.
Strictly speaking though, Steve, it's the second Windows phone with a Zinnen flash. The Lumia 928 Verizon has a Zinnen flash, because I know you've been having a look at that this week as well.
Yes, but that's rubbish. I'm sure Rafe might have an opinion here, but as I opined, I think, on previous podcasts, the 928 Zinnen flash is very much shoehorned in at the very last minute, probably under pressure from Verizon. It's horribly unoptimized, and I was very, very disappointed. It produced results not really much better than a dual LED flash. So I can't, this is the first real one. The HTC 7 Mozart, of course, Windows Phone 3 or 4 years ago, even worse. That was absolutely appalling. But this looks to be up at the same sort of level as the Nokia 828. And I think, as I say, everybody should be taking very good photos indoors with this.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. I mean, the interesting element of, you know, Xenon flashes is, you're right, they have to be properly optimized. And that certainly seems to be the case with the 1020. All of this is caveats, you know, based on relatively short demo time. I'll have to wait until we get our hands on one. But for example, I was talking to one of the Nokia imaging specialists about how the Xenon flash could also be used in bright conditions for what he referred to as fill-in flash. And that's when you've got kind of a backlit scene. Maybe you're standing in front of a sunny window when you're inside in a cafe or something like that. And actually the device is capable of using the Xenon flash for that kind of thing. So it's not just dark conditions. But you're right. Actually, what this camera does is it's able to perform well in a wider range of conditions. You know, Nokia's already done pretty well in low light, and of course it maintains that because you don't have to use the Xenon flash. You can turn it off and then it will behave similarly to the 920 because it's got optical image stabilization. That actually be better because it's got this huge sensor inside it, but when you turn on the Xenon flash, it can freeze movement in dark conditions. And as you said, Steve, you know, the pub shot is the kind of the classic example of that, or being in a club or somewhere like that. And so it opens up an additional area where you can, you know, capture high quality photos. But as I say, it does have a couple of other applications, you know, fill-in flash being a good example. But it's that kind of choice is one of the things that come through definitely on the 1020 camera. We'll talk about the pro camera software in a minute, but that's a further example of that. But essentially what it does is it, you know, combines PureView Stage 1 with PureView Stage 2 to create a camera that's, you know, very easy to use, but also very forgiving when you're taking photos. So as you say, Ewan, you know, the novice user should get great pictures out of it. But also because it's got that technology in it and the huge sensor, it's also going to, you know, really equip the pro photographer with something really quite powerful in the pocket.
So I think the main thing to take away, so one of the things that also caught my eye, and Steve, I'll bring you in here again, because this is sort of more the technical blocks, is there's nothing technology-wise, hardware from the 808 that's in the 1020. This is all brand new, even though it's using some of the same techniques from various previous Nokia phones, isn't it?
Yeah, I was very interested by the statement in the presentation saying that there is no component, there's no part of the 808's componentry that has carried forward to the 1020. Everything was redesigned, and you can kind of understand that. The 808's camera was a physically bigger camera. Yes, they're both 41 megapixel sensors, but the 808's is a good 2 or 3 millimeters thicker and fatter. The 808's got a 1/1.2 sensor. The 1020 is a 1/1.5. But I've gone backwards and forwards, Rafe, over the two specifications, looking at the two cameras, and I still reckon that they're roughly on a par. You've got the smaller sensor on the 1020, but it's BSI, it's backside illuminated, so it should improve the light gathering per pixel. You've got, on the one hand, you've got the 808 with its dedicated image signal processor. On the other hand, you've got the OIS on the 1020. You've got a slightly brighter flash on the 808, but then again, it's got that more sensitive sensor on the 1020, so that should compensate for the flash brightness. At every single stage, I find myself thinking, well, these devices, they should produce roughly similar results. At the end of the day, it probably comes down, Rafe, to things like the interface and the experience with the new pro camera application, the intuitive way you can fiddle with that, the dual capture system whereby you can, as they say, you can zoom in and frame something, take the shot and think, oh, I wish I'd captured something else, and then zoom out after the event to include another object. That's really rather clever. Plus, of course, things like the grip accessory. So the 1020 is very, very promising from where I'm looking. I still have my doubts as to whether it will quite match the 808 for some shots, but it's certainly, I would say, a lot more flexible and certainly more aimed at the mass market.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a hard question to answer until we actually do a side-by-side comparison. But actually, I'm confident enough to say, based on what I thought, I actually expect the 1020 to be noticeably superior to the 808. With the caveat, it is going to depend, as always, on the conditions that you're taking, what particular shot you're taking. We've said that before about camera comparisons. And a lot will also depend on the photographer, of course, as well, because to get the most out of either of these devices, you really need to know what you're doing. What is definitely fair to say is the 1020 will be much more forgiving to novice users than the 808 was. And not that the 808 was bad in that respect, it's just the optical image stabilization really takes handshake from camera phones out of the equation, and that's a pretty significant factor for most people when taking pictures. I mean, most of us will know to keep it extra still. If you're framing your shot carefully, that's fine, but if you're taking a rapid fire, kind of a happy snapshot as family or as people are running about or something like that, actually that becomes a significant factor for, I would say, everybody. you're right. You know, if you look at the sensor size, the pure physics of it, the light gathering, I think they're going to be fairly even by the time you've taken into account the different sensor size and the BSI. But where I think some of the differences may come in is the software processing. I mean, you mentioned the imaging chip. It doesn't have one on the 1020, but it doesn't need to have, and it shouldn't make any difference. There may be a slight performance difference. I mean, one of the things that didn't get mentioned too loudly was if you're in dual capture mode, there's going to be a 3.5 second shot-to-shot time. That's relatively long for a camera phone. Of course, if you switch it into pure view mode, it will then be much quicker. But I think at least some of the time you will want to be in that dual shot mode, because the reframing stuff actually is really clever. It's in some ways the highlight for me of the particular user experience. Maybe we'll touch on that later. But the thing about the software processing, it's got the kind of same processing as was in the Amber updates on the 925, and that, you know, made a significant improvement. But it's also got this, what Nokia referred to as a kind of true color technology, which means it will be better able to capture colors in a wider range of conditions. And, you know, it's always difficult to describe that, but it's kind of more accurate colors, but also feel that they have a kind of a pop to them. And it was an area where the 808, I wouldn't say it was weak, but sometimes color reproduction could be, you know, not stellar, particularly on, you know, difficult conditions. I mean, the 808, we're talking about relatively small grades of improvements here, and, you know, what we should probably emphasize is the 1020 is going to be way ahead of anything else on the market, with the 808 being the only thing that will be in the same league. And so it's sort of, you know, when you're talking about these devices, it's like comparing, say, the Lumia 925 to the iPhone 5 or the Galaxy S4. The 808 and the 1020 are going to be in, you know, anything, if anything, several leagues above. But, you know, I saw some sample images. I had a chance to capture them myself. You know, really, really very impressive, but it's almost impossible to judge until you do a side-by-side comparison of pictures you've captured yourself and are comparing down at the pixel level. But I have no doubt at all that it's going to be producing some absolutely stunning results.
Yeah, one just small qualification to what you just said. The best camera phone in the world right now isn't actually either of the two POV devices. Going slightly left field, Rafe, I've got the Galaxy S4 Zoom here for review. You know, 10 times optical zoom and some really, really impressive software and results from that. But I absolutely accept that that is chunky beyond belief. And it's effectively not much smaller than the 1020 with the grip attached. And that's carrying that around all the time. But I will accept that for a mainstream form factor, the 1020 is liable to be the number one for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, the Galaxy S4 Zoom is a really interesting device. I mean, it's sort of in the middle between connected camera and smartphone, and certainly more towards the connected camera side. And I think one of the things that doesn't come across necessarily very well in the 1020, when you see the pictures, you see there is the camera bulge. Nokia kept on talking about the point that it was a camera smartphone, but with no kind of caveat given to the camera phone, you know, no compromises made. There is a small bulge, but actually it almost feels like part of the design. You know, the design teams at Nokia have done a fantastic job. And whereas the 808 was, you know, a noticeably bulky device. And, you know, that's fine. If you want to carry a camera phone around like that, it's kind of a trade-off you accept. The 1020 really feels much more like a smartphone. And the fact that the camera phone is in there and the module has been reduced down to 10 millimeters, it's just such an astonishing engineering achievement. And there's various factors in that. One of that is, as I say, just reducing the physical side of the sensor down ever so slightly, the flat capacitor for the xenon flash, also taking out some of the components that previously were kind of XY and putting them in the Z plane. But that 10 millimeter camera module is just amazing, especially when you consider there's also optical image stabilization in there, and adding that to, you know, a sensor that size or a camera module that size is a really quite impressive achievement. Much easier from an engineering point of view what they did in the 920 and the 925, and that really, really surprised me. I mean, that together with the fact there isn't a specialist imaging chip in there, so there's been some custom work done. I mean, previously that Qualcomm Snapdragon processor supported camera phones up to a maximum of 20 megapixels, which makes me think they've actually done some custom work to make it work with the graphics CPU. I couldn't get confirmation on that, but what Nokia did say was they've done a custom job right from the silicon up to the software level, you know, completely rewritten that, and, you know, that's an awful lot of work, and it's a really, I mean, as I say, really stunning engineering achievement that's going to be very difficult for others to replicate, quite apart from all the sensor and the optics technology. And so I think that's a point I can't really emphasize enough, is that the 1020, you know, is in that sense a departure from some of Nokia's previous camera phone devices, which did add, you know, a bit of bulk in order to get those big camera modules in, and that's going to make it much more attractive to the average consumer. I mean, yes, there is a bulge. It's about 3 millimeters, I think, if you measure it. But as I say, it does almost feel like a, you know, the back of the device has a design as well. It's, you know, it stands out, and it's 150 grams, you know, lighter than the 920. It's a bit heavier than the 925, but doesn't feel excessively heavy. Honestly, I'm in awe of that design, given the complexities that have gone into it. Really quite astonishing achievement.
I think the other thing to point out here, Rafe, though, is although there was such a big focus on imaging and the software going on, it's still a Windows phone. And the additions that are coming up in Windows Phone weren't really mentioned here. So I think a lot of people might have just gone, oh, it's just Windows Phone with a camera. But there is more to the 1020. It's that sort of next iteration of Windows Phone that's actually going to be hitting the market.
That's right. I mean, as I say, it was termed as, you know, a smartphone with no compromise for the camera. And it's easy to forget that smartphone part. And essentially what you've got here is a 925 with an extra camera component. And so that camera component is obviously going to add to the cost. But it's, you know, very capable. We've been talking about Lumia Amber on the site, and that's, you know, and Windows Phone GDR2, and that's what's running on this 1020. And so that's things like low power Bluetooth support or Bluetooth Smart. It's updates for the camera app, so you can change the default camera app. And we should talk about the Pro Camera app. I'm sure Steve's got some interest in that, so maybe we'll address that next. But also, you know, updates under the hood to battery life, and so it's about 10% better battery life. There's also with Nokia introducing Glance Screen. We talked about that on a previous podcast. So I wouldn't necessarily describe it as a major update, but for those that had kind of the first generation of the Windows Phone 8 devices, there's quite a few nice little extras coming in here that kind of just make the device that little bit more attractive. And I mean, the only real difference is it's got 2 gigabytes of RAM. Apart from that, the kind of the core specification outside the camera is the same as all the other devices, albeit with 32 gigabytes of internal memory and possibly some variants to come with more than that. We'll have to wait and see. Telefonica got announced as a partner, but no details on what their exclusive device would have, but my bet would be it's in the memory department. And incidentally, that 2 gigabytes of RAM, it's all about doing processing from the camera. It won't really have an impact on making anything faster in day-to-day operations, so it's no point getting too excited about it. But I guess it does show off the prowess of Windows Phone, that you can continue to have what feels like a very fast and fluid, you know, operating system and experience on software or on an architecture that's actually getting relatively old now.
Steve, the Pro Camera app, it's a big change, because what got me was it's got all those big scary settings that you normally tell me to leave alone.
I'm sure Rafe can back me up here, but I imagine that everything runs in full auto very well indeed. And you just flick through to the advanced settings if you absolutely need them. I can't say much without trying it hands-on, but Rafe, the impression I got was that there's a lot of intelligence in this application. Now, the camera interface that was designed for the Nokia 808 and was kind of custom designed as sort of the third or fourth generation on from the Symbian smartphones, things like the N8. So the 808's camera application was really very well optimized for auto, then scene mode, and then the fiddle with everything mode. But you had to do a lot of tapping really to think ahead to exactly what you wanted to do. And then what you got was what you got. The thing with Pro Camera, integrated tightly with this dual capture system, is that you can shoot in full auto and you can zoom away and rely on the software to retain the details in those full resolution shots and intelligently present them without, you don't have to think, okay, and now I want the full resolution, or do I want the pure view 5 megapixel. It basically handles both of them and lets you zoom seamlessly between the two, which I think is pretty intelligent.
It is. I mean, I thought the 808, you know, camera stood out as being one of the best ones, but actually it was really for pro users. As you say, you had to go very deliberately through the settings and think quite carefully about it. That wasn't very accessible for novice users. Pro Camera, by contrast, I think will be much easier for novice users. And actually the good thing about that is it probably will encourage more people to try out the custom settings. And if you're a pro user, it actually makes changing those settings very easy. So I'd expect, you know, those sorts of people to use it more. Because, I mean, if truth be known, I use, you know, automatic mode on my camera phones probably 99% of the time. I think that could change with this Pro Camera. I mean, essentially what you've got is, you know, there's a camera icon that you slide out, and you then get these semicircular kind of settings for changing, you know, the kind of the key settings, things like exposure and ISO levels. and you can then just reach your thumb across and move them. You can also do them individually from a bar along the top. But actually what's really important about it is kind of the settings then have a live effect on the viewfinder, so you can see what's going to happen to the picture you take. And it's possible to change a whole variety of settings relatively quickly and then, you know, see that impact you'll have, then capture the image and then reset everything and try again. And I think particularly for things like ISO speed and exposure and even sort of capture time, that's actually a pretty big deal, because you can kind of get to know your camera and know what settings work best. And actually reinforcing that, there's this really great tutorial mode within the camera application that explains what all the settings do and show you kind of examples, so you can get a kind of a firm understanding of what it does. But it's also that feeling that this, you know, user interface fits in with the rest of Windows Phone. You know, sometimes, you know, camera phones kind of have a UI that is completely separate. I mean, I think Sony and Samsung both often take the approach of having a similar UI to that which they have in their standalone cameras. And it's not necessarily the wrong approach, but I really like what Nokia have done here. And certainly, I'm always hesitant to say this before trying it out for a longer period of time, but the best camera interface I've tried. I was really impressed by just that ease of use and the idea that things almost self-disclose. So, you know, you're trying something out, you can see what happens. And I think that's the best type of user experience. And that also goes into the post-capture. You were talking about the dual capture mode there. And it's always the thing that got the biggest ooh in the presentation. Certainly when you use it as a demo, you go, oh, that's really clever. And this is, you know, you go into the kind of the post-capture mode and you can do what's called reframing. And essentially, this is using the full resolution image and then cropping out just a little bit of it. And it's actually done with zooming and being able to rotate the image. And you know, you sort of go, well, actually it's not all that complicated, because basically all it is cropping. But it doesn't feel like that. It's kind of this magic that Nokia referred to of, you know, not worrying too much about the framing of the picture, but then going and changing it afterwards and maybe extracting four or five pictures from, you know, one big picture that you've taken. And it worked really well, and it's completely integrated into the camera, and so it feels like a natural extension of what you do already. And you know, I'd contrast it with things like Smart Camera or any of the other standalone, you know, lens apps. They're great, but you have to make a deliberate decision to use them and think about it maybe even before you start doing the capture. With this, as you were saying, Steve, it's really post-capture, and you're not really, you know, unzooming an image or zooming out because the data is stored there in the first place, but that's what it sometimes feels like. And I think it's a very clever approach, and it works, you know, fantastically well in practice. I'm really keen to try it out for myself. I mean, one of the reasons this will work so well is Nokia's actually using RAJPEG or random access JPEG. So it basically does some pre-processing on the JPEG, which means things are very slick and smooth when you're zooming in and out. It operates incredibly quickly. And it's not just you know, a square crop. You can actually rotate the image as well. And so, you know, rotate it to, say, 45 degrees and then grab a square out of it. And that sort of thing is very hard to do with a normal JPEG image, but thanks to this RAW JPEG technology, it happens really quickly, very smoothly. And I think that will rapidly become, you know, one of the big talking points of this, quite apart from all the settings and the massive megapixels. You know, you take an image and you suddenly go, actually I just wanted that little bit of it. And because you've got many megapixels to kind of play with, you can, you know, choose just 20% of the image and you still get a 5 megapixel image out at the end of the day. You know, obviously it's not quite as good as the PureView image where it's going 7:1, but because of the high quality of the optics and the size, actually it still produces some really good results. And we put some example images up on the site, and I did a few of those examples. It doesn't really come across that how well you can do that on the camera interface itself. And so that's something I'm really keen to see other people try and get an opinion on, that because I think that's going to be a really big point of this. It's quite hard to explain, so I'm not sure how well it can come across in marketing or in the shops, but people actually buy one and use it. I'm sure that's going to be a very popular feature.
And then we come to the question of who is actually going to buy this smartphone. First up, Rafe, bonus points to Nokia for going, here's the handset. It will be available for pre-order on date X. It will be available on July 26th on AT&T, and it will cost $300. Okay, we didn't get the SIM-free price. We didn't get rest of the world and everything, but that's progress.
Yes,
is this
But minus points for not having the rest of the world. I can't see that it would be that difficult to also announce a price before tax and subsidies. I mean, you can work it out roughly because...
Yeah, it would probably scare people though, like they did at the launch of the N-Gage for 10, 15 years ago.
Perhaps that's the case. And we were in New York, we're in the American market, and AT&T are basically the launch partner for this handset. Indeed, AT&T aren't just getting an American exclusive, they're getting kind of a global exclusive. So it'll launch in the US and it will be available exclusively there for a month, possibly even 2 months before it then becomes available in the rest of the world. If you look at that $299 price point with AT&T, it's an extra $200 over something like the $920 or $100 over kind of the standard pricing. So I'd actually expect the 1020 to maybe be £50 more expensive than kind of the standard high-end camera phones. I think in some markets you won't notice that. In the UK, for example, I'm pretty sure this will be available free on a contract. If you're buying it SIM-free, I would maybe look towards the unsubsidized and before tax prices of around 530, maybe 540 euros. That contrasts with the 925, which is sort of 450 euros, but we will have to wait and see it. But yes, you're right, it's going to be out essentially in less than 2 weeks. That's definitely progress.
Mm-hmm. It's also worth pointing out that as a 32 gigabyte smartphone on AT&T, it's the same price as the 32 gigabyte iPhone 5. So there is some comparativity. Comparativity, Steve? Yes?
I'll let you get away with that.
Thank you. Yeah, there is comparativity there between handsets of a similar memory size. But again, I mean, this is a high-end device, and Nokia has still sidestepped micro SD for external storage. And they've got to pack a lot inside. I can understand the aesthetics behind it, but this is a handset that's going to be the best part, 650, 700 quid SIM free, and it doesn't have expandable storage. And in this day and age, why are Nokia still doing that? I mean, if there was one negative reaction that I saw online, it's just like, oh, there's no micro SD, they're dead to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same answer as we've had before.
No, we're not listening.
not wanting to spoil the lines of the device and there not being the consumer demand for it. And
Lines. They still slap the AT&T logo on it, don't they?
Well, that's true. And I'm not sure I entirely buy that argument. But the simple truth of it is that 90% of people wouldn't use a micro SD card, and you design for the 90%, not the 10%. And I accept there's a strong constituency out there that would love to see a micro SD card. But by the same token, there's no micro SD card in the iPhone 5, and there's an extra capacity version you can buy, but I think it's not really worth getting distracted by this particular point. I understand completely that it's a frustration for many, but for the majority of people buying the device, it's not going to be a factor.
Yeah, it was just really the camera-centric nature of the 1020. I mean, it's been pointed out online, and I'm sure you can back it up, that they spent 28 minutes from the start of the presentation before they mentioned the word phone. And basically, it was all about the camera. So they are positioning it as a camera-centric flagship smartphone. And it just grates slightly to have a camera-centric device which doesn't have one of the primary attributes of every standalone camera in the world, which is a card expansion, where you can not only expand it to the size you want, but you can take the card out and plug it into another device like a desktop to do onward processing without having to mess around with Bluetooth or Wi-Fi transferring or even uploading it to the cloud and then downloading it again. So it degraded with me, but I do accept it's not a showstopper.
Yeah. But the other thing I should probably point out here, I don't really think it's an issue for still images at all. In dual shot mode, you're talking about 15 megabytes or so an image. So we're talking a lot of images that you can get onto that 32 gigs, even if you're only, say, allocating 5 gigs for imaging. For video, I think there's more of a case to answer here. Having said that, the number of people who are shooting half an hour or an hour's worth of video with their camera phone, very small. And again, it comes back to that 90%. You build for the 90%. I mean, from a personal point of view, yes, I would like to see a micro SD card on there. I agree with everyone, and I've had some emails about this. But I'm just trying to put the other side of the equation. And honestly, I think 32 gigabytes is enough.
Yeah, but I'm not going to buy that, Rafe, because, yes, you say designed for the 90%, but the 90% phone is probably the Nokia 620, not the Nokia 1020.
No, I'm talking about 90% of 1020 owners. Those that heavily, intensively use this and fill up all that memory are going to be in the minority. Of course, if it was 16 gigabytes, it would be a different different story. That would be a bigger percentage affected by it.
And we can presume that there's going to be 64 gig at some point, Telefonica, in the near future as well.
Well, that would be my guess for the Telefonica variant, or maybe an extra colour as well.
But for me to be devil's advocate for a second, which I know is unusual on the podcast, that 10% of people who will heavily use the 1020 and would appreciate a micro SD card, those are the 10% that are going to go out, that are going to evangelize, that are going to create websites like pureviewclub.com, that are going to go out and sell your phone on your behalf. And it's a relatively common platform in terms of hardware. And we see micro SD on things like the 820, which has been a wonderful boon for me using that on that handset and on the smaller devices as well. You know, if the argument, Rafe, is that 10% of people aren't using it on the high-end devices, but it's on the low-end devices, are you saying that more people use micro SD on lower devices than higher devices, or Nokia trying to create artificial scarcity here to help with the memory sizes? Or, I'll even give you a third option, AT&T have said we don't want them to use micro SD because we want them to use the AT&T cloud server, which is an extra $15 a month or something. Rafe.
While Rafe has a think about the answer to that question, which is a three-part question, which may take some time, I just wanted to play the other rare role for me as the Windows Phone apologist. So we're both switching roles here. In the 1020's defense, I had a Lumia 920 here now for about 5 or 6 months. I've used it on and off as a main phone. And Mark, who runs the PureView Club down in Europe, he's also had a 920. At no point, interestingly, have either of us ever said, I've run out of storage, or that 32 gigabyte wasn't enough. Yes, with the 16 gig, you know, Lumia 925. Yes, with some of the other phones in the range, other Windows phones, which have been more limited. The HTC, the 8S in particular, was particularly atrocious. But for these 32 gigabyte models, I mean, I'm a power user. I load videos and music, and I take photos and videos on the Lumia 920, and I imagine I would on the 1020, and not once so far have I thought, this is limiting. I really wish I had micro SD. I can absolutely wish for it, like Rafe did. I can see all the advantages, but actually in a real world capability, I've never actually complained. So in fairness, that Nokia's decision may be right.
And there we go. That's basically the argument that Nokia would hand back if a power user like Steve isn't that bothered, or rather hasn't used it on the 920. Everyone might think they need it, but do they really need it? And sort of Nokia knows best. Now, I'm joking.
Your question about... Moved round and Rafe is answering his questions in 30 seconds. What's happened to the podcast?
To answer your question, yes, people do use it more on the lower end devices, but that's because they've got less internal memory, and it's a way of, you know, upgrading. And, you know, you go from, say, 8 gigabytes up to 16 gigabytes, or maybe even more, and, you know, that's the way you do it. When you buy a more expensive device, you get the memory that you need with it. I actually think, for me, the boundary is the 16 to 32 gigabytes, and I actually think the 925 not having a micro SD card slot is a bigger issue. And like Steve, you know, I've been using the 920 as my main device and shot loads of camera and video on it. I haven't even taken, you know, the camera stuff off. You know, it's all still sitting on there after, you know, 8 months of use now. And I haven't run out of room. I'm admittedly now approaching the kind of the 30 gigabyte point.
So you have backed up, or haven't you?
Yes, it's all backed up to SkyDrive. I use the, you know, high resolution upload.
Folks out there, if you're listening, if you haven't backed up in the last 2 weeks, back up now.
Yeah, there we go. And so, you know, we've now managed to spend sort of 5-10 minutes talking about micro SD. I honestly don't think it's an issue. I mean, I understand it, and I might still like to have it, but, you know, the clean lines, the making it, you know, structurally better, you know, not having that added cost, the support cost that goes with it. And honestly, Windows Phone doesn't handle micro SD terribly well at the moment, so overall I find myself not really caring about it. Things that we should care about, though, are the accessories that come with the 1020. I was really quite impressed by these when I saw them, particularly the grip, but I'd be interested to get your view on this, Steve. I mean, you've already mentioned it in the context of a Galaxy S4 Zoom. What do you make of this? Does it turn it into a kind of a different device once you slot in this grip?
The fascinating thing is it's a psychological factor. Once you hold a device with a proper camera grip, assuming you're right-handed, of course, you hold it in your right hand and your fingers snuggle around this big chunky grip, and your finger hovers over a really meaty shutter button, as it is on the S4 Zoom, and it is, as indeed with the 1020 in its grip, your psychology, wow, I'm really going to take loads of photos. And it puts you in the right frame of mind to zoom in, to take photos, to try arty stuff that you wouldn't necessarily take. you know, thinking, I've got a camera phone, I can take some snaps and maybe they'll be good, but they won't be fantastic. But once you've got a grip in your hand, you think, so I can do this. And it's a kind of a psychological factor. Now, the 1020 in its grip is larger than things like the S4 Zoom, but it's, in fairness, it's no larger than a typical DSLR. So I'm all for this. The only caveat, I suppose, is you'd have to take it everywhere with you, like in the glove box of your car or in your backpack, because I can see people out and about and, I wish I had my grip. Oh, darn, I left it at home. So you do kind of have to cart this plastic accessory around with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a question of getting used to it. And certainly anyone who's got a camera will know that bringing a tripod with them or an extra lens in the case of SLR cameras, you know, they're kind of used to that idea. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's, you know, changes the way people think about the device. I mean, in terms of the hands-on, I mean, one of the things I should have said about the 1020, you pick it up, it feels like a light, traditional smartphone. You know, it's got that almost that X factor. The first few seconds after you pick it up, it just feels nice in the hand. It's gone back to having a matte rather than a gloss finish on it. It just feels really nicely made, and there's an alignment of all the bits around the outside, so they're all on that same axis. You know, they've strengthened the corners of the screen of the device that's been slightly redesigned, and that's superior to the previous Lumia devices. But you slot in this camera grip, and it works pretty much like the kind of the clip-on covers. Do you kind of slot it in, it goes into place, and there's an extra battery in there, and so I can't remember the exact capacity, but it adds, you know, that 50% again to the battery capacity. And so any extra battery you might use taking videos or pictures, you kind of will get back by putting this camera grip on. And Steve says it's got this better camera capture button. It's more about the thickness of the device. You know, smartphones have now got quite thin, and you compare it to a traditional camera, it's quite fat. Those traditional cameras being fat, it's actually a good thing. It makes them easy to grip, and calling it a camera grip is no mistake. There's kind of an extra bit on one end with a more grippy texture on part of it, and it just changes the way you look at the device. I wouldn't say it goes up to SLR size or SLR-like capabilities. I mean, it gets close maybe to the low-end ones, but certainly the high-end point-and-shoot cameras, you know, those which are just a little bit bigger, it does get into that category. And then, of course, having the tripod mounting point as well. If you're going to start doing interesting things with the camera, that's, you know, a great boon to have. And I think there's a much more sensible approach than having kind of the tripod mounts that we've previously seen on smartphones, which are kind of clip-on accessories where you know, do up a screw and it tightens a rubber hold around the device or something like that with the 8. I'm just being told in the back channel by Steve that the battery capacity is 1050 milliamp hour, so yes, as I say, about 50% again. The actual transfer process won't be completely efficient, so maybe 800 to 900 milliamp hours, but enough to, you know, give you a really good extra power boost. The only thing I'd say about it is it's slightly on the pricey side. I think it was $79, so, you know, as with a lot of camera accessories, it's not that cheap. I'm sure that'll come down in cost, but I will say that it feels, you know, very well built. Maybe slightly plasticky the materials on the outside compared to the polycarbonate body of the phone. When you clip it into place, everything feels really solid. You know, it actually doesn't feel like a clip-on cover. It feels like a one-piece thing. To the extent it's actually a little tricky to get out. You have to just wiggle the size of the phone a bit, and it does work. But it was quite interesting watching some of the demo people just struggling slightly to get the camera grip off. But I think that's a good thing, because it's the sort of thing you're going to put on for an afternoon and, you know, take out with you when you go shooting pictures, and you don't want it falling off or being slightly delicate. So, you know, thumbs up from that. It's also the 1020 going to have this wireless charging cover that you slip on, much like the 720 and the 925. I didn't actually see one in person, but the picture showed it to be just the same as those other devices, and that adds the wireless charging. And that wireless charging, why was it not included with the device? Well, yes, it would have made it a little bit thicker and an extra cost. That's not that big a deal in the case of the 1020, because actually there's still some logic inside the device to enable that wireless charging. But, you know, even that small difference, I think, has an impact. And I've sort of come to the view that unless you can include a wireless charging pad actually within the box, it's no point including wireless charging within the device itself, because, again, it's a 90% of people versus 10% of people. And obviously those charging pads, those wireless charging pads, are going to remain more expensive than the standard charger for some time to come. But yes, all round accessories, a nice picture, and we're told that they're going to be available at the same time the device launches. We've had some previous Lumia devices that not be the case, and certainly I'll be queuing up for a 1020 camera grip, and I assume you too will. You will too, Steve.
Well, I'm hoping you'll buy one for the team and send it down to me to review.
Yes, well, we're going to review the device just as soon as we can. We may be a little bit delayed because, as I say, it's launching in the States first on AT&T, and it's going to be available globally only a little bit later on. It will probably be the end of August, but I can't give you a definite time. Nokia weren't willing to commit to any particular time frame. But one of the questions is, you know, why is that delay happening? Well, it's because AT&T really like the device and they've made a big commitment to it. And that would only happen if, you know, they thought it was a good device and thought it was going to sell, and Nokia would only agree to it if AT&T had made a substantial commitment in terms of units they were willing to buy and marketing they were going to put behind it. And I wouldn't quite compare it to the original iPhone, because I'm not sure it's going to sell in those kind of numbers. It's one of the things that's interesting about this 1020, but I do expect it to be a very substantial launch on AT&T. And I actually think the big effect the 1020 will have is less maybe around loads of sales numbers, because it is an expensive device, but it's going to have a halo effect on the rest of the Lumia range. People are going to hear about this device, they're going to hear about Lumia, and then they're going to go into the phone shop and say, oh, can I get a Lumia device? And they may not walk away with a 1020, but Nokia's got a pretty complete range with the 925, the 920, the 820, the 720, the 620, and 520 at all price points. And that's maybe something they've not quite had before, a halo device that really stands out from the crowd. You know, this camera is something, you know, that you cannot get anywhere else really, and that's, I think, an important part of the Nokia strategy. Honestly, it's a halo device, and if the 1020 doesn't sell in the tens of millions, I think it will certainly have a boost on the overall Lumia sale numbers. Mm-hmm.
For those of you wanting to keep a reference to and that marker that Rafe has put down, Rafe, the first generation iPhone sold 6.1 million units through its lifetime, which, if you take the normal power distribution curve, probably means that it sold 4 million in the first 6 months. Fair target for the 1020 or not?
Yeah, I guess that probably would be a reasonable target for the first 6 months. As they're very different, because they're, as I say, is this rest of this Lumia range. I think the important thing will not be to say, oh, the 1020 sold X million. I think actually it's, does it get people talking about the Lumia range and by association Windows Phone and the impact it has? You know, we've had some high-end devices. I think the 925 is, you know, a fine device in that sense, you know, but it's sort of competing on an equal footing. The 1020 has something that rather sets it apart and will make people talk about it because of that. And I'm sure that's going to be followed up in the marketing. We'll hear all about the fantastic imaging. You know, expect to see people showing off example pictures that may be getting mentioned in cross promotions and things like that. And that's where I expect the significance of this device to have an impact, not necessarily on just pure sales numbers of the 1020 itself. I may be proved wrong. It may be because it's so close to, you know, well, let's say it doesn't really make a compromise to have that great camera. It's still a normal smartphone as well. And if people are willing to pay you know, a slight premium for it, which it will be at first, I think in time that will come down, then it could sell, you know, very well for a high-end device, and, you know, potentially could outsell the 920 and the 925. The smart money, I would suggest, is still to say that, you know, it won't be at quite that level, and I think the 925 will benefit enormously from the halo effect, but also that will have a trickle-down effect through the rest of the range. But that's being rather more speculative. As I still feel I need to step back. I've been at this launch event, and you do tend to get inside the bubble, and it was difficult not to sort of just have your mouth drop open at the sort of the impressive engineering that had been achieved here, but also some of the pictures being shown off, the excitement that was being shown by the Nokia staff in particular. They were so proud to show off this device, and they've been wanting to talk about it for a long time. Not just the imaging teams, but the sales teams, the marketing teams, the comm team. And that was quite apparent in all my interactions with them. You know, I sat down to an interview, and the person I was interviewing go, I've been wanting to tell you about this device for the last 12 months, Rafe. And, you know, I had an interview previously with this same spokesperson and had asked about the sort of future progression of imaging. Of course, couldn't say anything then. And that level of kind of excitement and passion, I think, speaks well for the product, but also for the company.
Just, can I just check one thing, Rafe? At any point, did they strap you to a chair and have you listen to lots of classical music while watching a 1966 film starring David Hemmings?
No, they didn't try any brainwashing techniques, although that the slickness of the presentation did feel a bit like that, which is why I say I kind of need to step back and think about it. But honestly, all the signs of a really great hit device are there. Something that makes it stand out from the crowd, quite simply, astonishing camera, It really is quite amazing. And it's not just the hardware. We've talked all about that. It's also the software experience that goes with it, and you know, the ability to share those things. And there were some extra announcements there with kind of Ogle Pro coming in, and there's going to be more in that department, I'm sure, to come soon. But also, it was the design of the device. You know, each of the Lumia devices has been a progression from the previous one. Described how that was the case from the 920 to the 925, but even the 1020, launching just a few months after the 920, feels a bit more of a step on. So it's just the little details, like the strengthening of the corner of the device, kind of a smaller gap, just reinforcing it. So that means if you drop it, it's less likely to break. Kind of the alignments of all the parts around the outside. The speaker, for example, has returned to the bottom of the device like it was on the 920, not the rear like it was on the 925. The use of aluminium material on the side buttons, all of those extra little details, you know, do make a difference. And you know, I think that will come out in some of the reviews of the 1020. That extra level of refinement is important because it's those small details that you kind of notice later on, even if all the headlines are about the 41 megapixel camera.
So there we go. Steve, do you think Rafe picked up on the David Hemmings reference?
Yes, I do. Come on, everybody knows 1960s David Hemmings films.
Rafe?
I was thinking it was Clockwork Orange, but obviously I'm...
He had two references there. You picked up the Ludovico, well done, but the other one is your homework for the week then, I think.
Okay, well, I will go and look up suitably obscure cultural references. Well, they're not obscure, but they're obscure for someone of my generation, perhaps.
And see, that's the problem of the youth of today. They just don't know movies and pictures when they're... Anyway, yes, that's your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. There's still lots more to talk about, so we'll see if we can get another one in by the end of the week, because there's all the software changes. We've had time with the Nokia 928, even though Steve would just like us to go, oh, it's just a little thing on Verizon. And there's all the updates to Hear Maps, software changes coming through as well, plus a bundle of software. And at some point in the next couple of weeks, Halo Spartan Assault as well will be coming to Windows Phone. And not only do we have the big guns in imaging, we have the big guns of the big guns coming through as well. We will be bringing you all of that over the summer and on throughout the rest of the year on allaboutwindowsphone.com. See, I've remembered to drop the www. So Rafe can smile once more. Thank you to the wandering minstrel that is Steve Litchfield.
You're welcome. And just in the Lumia 928's defence, in case I'm not invited on the podcast at the end of the week, despite my disparaging of the 928 Xenon Flash, it was still the nicest Windows Phone handset I'd ever held.
So, yeah. That's fine. You're my favourite. You can come back. We also have Rafe Blanford, who fresh back from New York and I don't know, did your phone get scanned by the NSA as you're going through customs?
Well, I don't know about it, but I'm sure it was. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening to the podcast. We have got more to talk about. I'm sure the 1020 is going to come up again. If you've got any questions, please send them in. You can send them in via Twitter, Facebook, email, Rafe at All About Windows Phone, or Ewan at All About Windows Phone, or even Steve at All About Windows Phone. We always like hearing from our listeners. But yeah, there's a lot more to come this summer, both in terms of software and devices, and I suspect there'll be plenty of reviews along too soon. And if you hear sounds of fighting at All About Towers, it's because Steve and I are having a strong discussion about how we're going to review the 1020.
Yeah, and I'll be playing Halo. So there we go. This feels almost like a mid-season relaunch podcast, but there we go. We'll be back at least within 7 days, if not more. More flows, more news at the website, allaboutwindowsphone.com. Leave your comments. Do interact. Rafe pays a check, so technically he is my favourite. But everybody out there listening, you're my favourites as well. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your ears. And we shall catch you again in the next podcast. Ta-ra for now.